So ever since... Wait, hang on.
That was awesome. That was a misclick right there.
So we only just started talking.
We did just start talking right now. So welcome once again, folks, to All Things Trek here on TrekRadio.net. I'm Bob.
Who are you? We're going to do this again. Who are you, exactly? And who let you into my show?
Who let you into my show?
This is All Things Trek. I have been here for like the last 3 weeks running this show, and I don't even... You look kind of familiar. Like, maybe you were here like a million years ago or something.
I'm that guy that everyone actually likes to listen to.
That's rude. oh, right. You're the podcast UGC guy. I listen to your show sometimes. It's pretty cool when you actually talk about Star Trek Online. Not really.
No, true. I'm not a figment of your imagination. We did do a podcast once upon a time here, All Things Trek.
Back in the day.
Back in the day. Yes. No, we are actually once again here together talking once again. Together.
It's actually been separate. An entire month because I was gone for that 1 week.
Has it really?
And then you were gone for 3 weeks. And yeah, we haven't done this podcast together for a month. It's pretty special.
Huh. All right. So what's new?
Well, okay. I figured out that in the Bridge Commander mod that I have, the Delta Flyer is broken as heck.
So what does that mean?
Okay, so the Delta Flyer, it has, it's basically its phasers never need to recharge. And for whatever reason, it has a pretty much a full phaser arc. There's only like one tiny spot directly behind it where the phaser doesn't shoot.
So it's like a 340 degree arc then?
Yeah, but whatever that translates into three-dimensional environment. And like it can basically always keep firing. It's really agile and its shields recharge incredibly fast. Like four of them can defeat a galaxy easily in this mod. Like, I tried to fight four of them as a galaxy, and I got hosed. It was terrible.
Well, your first mistake is playing a bunch of Bridge Commander mods.
No, I like your Bridge Commander mod.
Obviously, this mod is dumb.
Well, I mean, it's got some balance issues, but it's pretty impressive.
You're telling me four Delta Flyers take on Galaxy Class and win?
I actually had a lot of trouble taking out Voyager in my Galaxy Class, because the Galaxy Class has this weird problem where...
Well, see, this is why this mod's dumb.
It gets hit, like, once, and, like, all of its... Like, once its shields go down, if it gets hit in this one spot, like, more than half of its phasers go offline. And it's weird, and I don't know why it does that. But for the most part, it's not any more unbalanced than the original Bridge Commander was. I mean, did you ever try to fly a Galor in the original Bridge Commander?
I always fought Galors.
Yeah, and they popped like water balloons.
Yeah,
like,
they did.
Like six Galors against two Birds of Prey, and the Birds of Prey win easily. Like, there's that one fight, and the only reason you even need to get involved in that fight is that if you don't, the Galors might just ignore the Birds of Prey and try to blow up the space station that Picard is on. Like, they don't need your help, except to protect the space station. Which, incidentally, you fail the mission if one of your torpedoes accidentally hits the space station. I found that out the hard way.
Well, why are you throwing your torpedoes at the space station, Orin?
I'm not. Sometimes the Bird of Prey flies in front of the space station, and I need to shoot torpedoes at it.
Why? Wait, what do you mean shoot?
The Galor.
Yeah, the Bird of Prey is your friend.
Yeah, the Bird of Prey is my friend. That's part about that story that's weird is that, like, the Birds of Prey are my friends and help me out in all these fights, and then, like, they get into a fight, and we're like, I don't know if we should help them. They kind of started it, and it's like, they helped us in all these fights that we started. I mean,
remember all those times we done goofed and they helped clean up the mess?
Yeah.
Don't you think we owe them one?
Yeah, it's a fan-made mod, so there's just some weird balance issues. The fact that so many of those ships look as good as they do in the fan mod is really impressive. Like, the Excelsior, for example, is in this mod, and it looks really good.
Yeah, but can it take on four Delta Flyers?
No.
I'm not impressed, then. I'm not impressed.
You know, like, there's some other weird
So what you're saying is I can lose looking really good.
Yeah, exactly.
Not good enough, Orin.
Exactly.
Not good enough. Like, well, at all.
I'm sorry. This is, you know, it just, we should make our own mods, is what it is. We could balance them correctly. That's all I got.
Based on?
I don't know, based on who we think should win in a fight.
Four Delta. Well, I don't know. That sounds like a lot of math I don't want to do, like,
all right.
At all.
All right.
Speaking of math and whatnot.
What about math?
I'm not playing so much Star Trek Online anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you've been paying attention at all. There's been a recent thing with the EV suits having come out. Have you heard about this at all?
All I hear about is the Fleet Starbases and how awesome Fleet Starbases are, and everyone loves Fleet Starbases.
Well, I think the excitement for Fleet Starbases has kind of waned, actually, in the past couple weeks.
But it sounds like they're just a giant grind. Well, it sounds like
they are. It's a giant bucket that you're throwing a bunch of stuff into.
Yeah, it sounds like they introduced a thing where you could put in, like, all these resources that otherwise you had nothing to spend on.
Well, yeah, we all have an abundance of these resources lying around, whether it be, you know, bridge officer, expertise points now is what they're called. They used to be bridge officer skill points. Dilithium for some people, data samples, commodities, all the stuff that we had sitting around that we weren't doing anything with. And this is a great outlet for that kind of stuff, but the quote-unquote end game for star bases, I feel, isn't really all that worth it.
I mean, isn't it basically just a giant, like, social zone that you get to build?
Well, it is a social zone. You can go there and your fleet mates will be there, but there's not much reason to go there and have it be a social zone for any reason for than just being a social zone.
Does it give you... It gives you, like, special missions, doesn't it?
At the moment. Well, there are some missions on there. Like, there's the Officer of the Watch will have various little things to do, like inspecting cadets and telling them why they're wrong because their cuffs are folded the wrong way. There's things like that. You have to go out and scan various facilities. I mean, it's
like
cool, and it adds a little more to, you know, kind of the daily operations that, you know, a fleet would go through. It's just not there yet, though. It's not quite there yet. Like, they've introduced just a little bit, and there just needs to be way more stuff in there in order for it to feel like a fleet operation, you know, a fleet operations kind of deal.
As impossible as I understand this is, it would be really cool if the fleet starbases just existed in the normal map and weren't, like, you know, instances, basically.
Yeah.
It would be cool if you could just fly to them, but I know they can't do that because then there'd be like 50 fleet star bases clustered in this one spot.
Yeah.
They should make zoning rules on where you can put your star base.
Yeah.
I know...
You need a permit to put down in Sirius Sector next to Earth or something like that. Yeah, so it's... I don't know what to feel about it, really, because it was really exciting for us to hear about it, because then we have this thing we can all concentrate on, I think this group project, and now it's kind of just the way... It's been implemented in the way I've been interacting with it so far. It's just kind of like, what do I really care?
Well, it sounds like
I don't really care about this.
It sounds like it energized people. Like, they were talking about, like, on Podcast UGC, you guys were talking about Caspian Fleet being all excited about it, which is cool. I mean, if something comes out that excites you about the game, that's nice.
Yeah, but it's going to have
some
sort of staying power.
Am I defending Star Trek Online from you?
I think you are.
What is going on in this show?
I don't know, man.
Oh, my goodness.
Crazy.
All right, so what about these EV suits? I don't know anything about these.
So... I mean, before we had these environmental suits of, I guess they were Cardassian design or Geminar design or something like that.
Really?
Yes, and these are the ones that we got to use.
The Federation is outsourcing its EVE suit design to Cardassia?
That's the exact comment I made on Ventrilo the other day. I was just like...
President Sisko would never have stood for this.
Well, that's the exact comment I had made when these first had come out with the featured episode series, the 2800, when the, you know, Dominion comes back through the wormhole after being shuffled away by the prophets back in Deep Space Nine.
Right.
And these are the only EVCs we had, and then we had missions slowly come out where we had, like, the dilithium mining event where we had to use our EV suit to mine dilithium on an asteroid.
Sure.
And then we had New Kara Prime, which is where the Tholians are all causing a bunch of problems now.
Right.
And,
Tholians are what to do.
Right. And all the suits look the same. You know, you have this Cardassian design, and people were like, well, where are, like, you know, the Starfleet EV suits, like some of the NPCs were wearing, like you see at a First Contact movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, where are those EV suits? And then, like, Klingon EV suits kind of look like something out of 1963, you know, The Forbidden Planet, personally, I think, but they look really goofy.
Fair enough.
But the thing is that you have to buy them for $7 now on the Star, and it's for one character.
Not even account-wise. $7 per character.
Per character. Jesus. If you lose or get rid of it for a reason, you can't claim a new one, you have to buy it again.
Huh?
Yeah.
How would you lose it?
If you sold it or so. I mean, because these things are tradable in the exchange.
Oh.
Or tradable in the players, from what I understand.
I guess that makes a little sense.
You know,
you don't want to have an infinite number of suits.
Yeah, but it kind of hit me a little hard when I heard this news, because I had heard it secondhand, and then I went and read the dev blog about it. I'm like, really? Seriously? It's just, it's putting Star Trek Online into an uncomfortable monetization that doesn't, it doesn't feel comfortable at all.
Well, isn't that kind of backwards? Shouldn't they have it so that you get the Starfleet ones as part of the mission, and then you can pay money for the not Starfleet ones? Wouldn't that make more sense than having it you default to a Cardassian suit, and then you can pay money if you want a suit that's correct for your character?
It doesn't make any canonical sense at all, but...
That's just weird. That's just like the opposite of the way free-to-play usually, like, you know, microtransactions usually work.
Well, it goes to a comment that I've
said
a couple times to people on you know, other podcasts, and just in private conversation, is that I feel a lot of the development for Star Trek Online is becoming reactionary as opposed to proactive.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
You know, so, and this is just, I think, another example of that, is that they are trying to find ways to monetize the game so they can make more money off of it. But it's kind of cheesing people off, and it's kind of cheesing me off a little bit. And like I said, making it uncomfortable to continue playing Star Trek Online when a lot of the things that make Star Trek what it is, you know, a lot of the aesthetics anyway, mm-hmm. which are the normal aesthetics, are the ones that you have to buy, but you can use all this other alien tech when we're already Starfleet or Klingon Defense Force officers.
That doesn't even, that's weird.
Right?
If you were playing League of Legends and you, like, got the character Riven, and you started off with her, like, bunny suit costume. Because her bunny suit costume is supposed to be this weird costume that is just an alternate thing you can use, and it's kind of a joke on the fact that she hops around all the time
mm-hmm.
As one of her moves. But, like, no, that's the one you start with. And if you want to get her normal costume, where she's, like, the Dark Avenger of, like, some evil emperor guy, you have to buy that one.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's just I'm not as excited about Star Trek Online anymore. And to further push me away from it, Secret World came out.
Well, I don't want to get too much into Secret World, but I do. I have heard that's a pretty decent game.
Well, I'm not going to get into it really all that much either. It's really good. I think you would enjoy it because it's a much smarter game than other MMOs.
Yeah.
And I'll show you after the show a little bit, if you got time.
I've been playing freaking Deus Ex because I want to play...
Deus Ex. Is the thing you leave in the toilet.
Deuces are a lot of things, okay?
God.
Anyway, yeah, I've been playing that a lot. But, alright, so we had a topic in here somewhere because we don't have any emails because we had, like, a weird iTunes problem, so I don't think anyone's actually heard
our
last episode.
No, it wasn't a problem, it's just I wasn't updating it.
Oh. I was trying to cover for you, Bob. I figured that no one really knows how iTunes works, I could just pretend we had, like, an iTunes problem, and that would be, like, you know, no one would ask why we were being so lazy. But
well, I'm glad that I'm a guardian of the truth here, and I've uncovered your lies.
All right. I was trying to pull a Vedic Burial here and lie for you about Kai Opaka, but that, no. And that was a kind of a stretch metaphor, I know, but...
If we're going with, like, Star Trek characters, I think at best we're Ferengi waiters and Quarks. I think it's probably the best we got.
Oh, my goodness.
If we're going with the Star Trek
characters. I don't want to work for Quark.
Well, we are now, so, you know. All right, so this is... we're talking about First Contact today, right?
That's the plan.
Not the movie, though.
No, not the movie. By First Contact, I mean episodes that are about First Contact.
Now, this is something
you... species.
You were talking to me about this, and this is something that had come up from you listening to G&T.
I wasn't going to bring that up either. I don't want us to sound like the after show of G&T and Podcast UGC, but fine. Yeah, this came up because they were talking about Voyager, and they had Terry had just rewatched Random Thoughts, which is a Voyager episode where they go to meet these new people, and I hate that episode. I hate that episode with a fiery passion. I think that episode is a microcosm of, like, half the things that are wrong with Voyager. And they went into it a little bit, but they didn't go into it, like, completely and really go into it and be like, why is this episode so stupid? But like, and I thought if I made this whole episode, this whole podcast about First Contact episodes, I could get to Random Thoughts and naturally segue into explaining why it's so terrible. But now that's all gone. All the grace is gone from this podcast. Now we're just really obviously clunking our way towards a thing that I wanted to rage about.
Well, I'm a guardian of truth, and I'm also, you know, making sure that we have no tact by the end of the show.
I'm never telling you the reason why I want to do a topic again. You will forever live in mystery.
I'm not comfortable with that.
Well, we can deal with it, because that's the way we do things now on
Okay.
Fixed Track. All right,
so what do you want to talk about first?
All right, well, I guess start with TOS. And just
go figure.
Yeah, I guess. You're going to do it in chronological order, because that was the way that it was easiest to look up.
Okay.
And just for reference, I'm going to be skipping a lot of episodes that are technically First Contact episodes because they're like the Enterprise gets ambushed by some random alien and it like attacks them a bunch. But I'm trying to limit these to episodes where they actively seek out contact because that's the only way you can really judge them. Like, you can't really judge someone's First Contact procedures when they get ambushed by aliens with lasers.
Well, how good is your first contact when your first contact is at the end of a phaser?
It's not great.
I'm just, you know, that's you know, a strenuous first contact situation.
It is, but at that point it's just a battle situation. I mean, if you're getting shot at by some alien, the fact that you don't know who they are isn't really going to change your response. It's like, you know, just shoot back. We're being shot by lasers. Please, you know, we have to defend ourselves. So, you know, that's why we're not talking about every single episode of Voyager and Enterprise. Because technically, a lot, those are all first contact situations, but most of them don't really matter, because it's just some random alien that we've never seen before and we'll never see again shooting at them.
Okay, alright.
And, you know, we ran out of time, we could always talk about some of those. But, TOS, actually, as I was looking through it, I was actually sort of surprised. There aren't a whole lot of first contact TOS episodes that aren't, like, some random alien ambushing them. That's pretty much the format. There are only a few where they are actively seeking contact with another race.
Okay, well, are we establishing that first contact as being that is with another civilization?
Well, what else would it be?
Well, like another omnipotent being.
Well, sure, that can count.
Like, what's another good example? Or just something sentient, for example, like the Horda.
Well, actually, the Horda, I think, is on this list.
Is it?
I think I have Devil in the Dark on there. Maybe I forgot to put it down.
I don't see it, but we'll get to it.
Yeah. But, like, the first ones that come to mind...
Because is first contact, just as I was you know, asking the question, is first contact going to be just with something that is new and different, or is it going to be with a civilization that is new and different?
I will entertain anything you want to throw out on that.
Okay, we'll
talk about.
We'll see what comes up as we go, but anyway.
But, like, the ones that, like, the first ones that come to my mind are, there's actually three episodes, because they're sort of the same story, just told different ways. There's A Piece of the Action, Bread and Circus, and Patterns of Force. A Piece of the Action,
which we have,
is the
gangsters, Romans, and Nazis.
Yeah. Well, A Piece of the Action is the very, very memorable episode where they find the alien, the race of the super mimics. I think was their explanation.
The Iotians,
like,
right?
Yeah. Is that, no? I don't think they're called Iotians. I think Iotians are somebody else. But I forget what they were called exactly. But they were a race of people who could copy things really well, and that was what they did. And some, and these are technically not actually first contact, these are second contacts, where, like, they go back after some really bad first contact has already happened, but you can see the aftermath of it. It's interesting. Like, in A Piece of the Action, there was, like, a Federation ship that visited this planet and left them a book about gangsters.
For whatever reason.
For who knows why. and then they all became gangsters. And then, Bread and Circus is the episode, like, a Federation ship crash landed on this Rome on alternate Earth. This is also this Bread
didn't
and Circus
crash.
It didn't crash.
It did not crash. The ship went there. Landing party went down, and the captain of that ship, who was not a Starfleet captain, I think it was just a freighter captain or something like that. They weren't Starfleet, they weren't allowed to be in Starfleet or something like that. Was in a hostage situation, and the only way out was to have the rest of the crew come down and be assimilated into that culture, because Emperor, I guess that was the Emperor, right? That was
I think so.
The Emperor there was, you know, we don't want our planet known to the rest of the galaxy. Ooh, you guys should totally come down here and live with us. And then they all got put into slavery. And
well, as I recall, the captain of the ship went along with this idea because he liked the idea of living in luxury in alternate Rome. And he basically forced any of his crew who didn't want to go along with it into the gladiatorial pits. Because I think that was what actually made the Enterprise go over and check it out, was that they got, like, a television broadcast from fake Rome, and they saw one of the dudes in the gladiator pit was basically one of the guys from the missing freighter, and they were like, hey, now, what's going on here? Let's go check this out.
What?
And, you know, in retrospect, if your goal is to keep your planet from being poked at by the Federation, you should probably not have broadcast that.
Stop beaming crap into space.
I mean, you know, like, really, It's way too late for us. If there are any aliens out there, it is way too late for us to pretend we don't exist, because we have, like, this 100-light-year sphere of TV broadcasts that any alien ship that comes into range would pick up and be like, what's going on here? Let's check out this planet that's shouting at us.
totally catching waves of Archie Bunker right now.
Yeah, exactly. So those episodes, and then Patterns of Force is the Nazi one, and Patterns of Force is not an alternate Earth. It was just these two you know, species, this one planet and another planet that was off in the same system. And this one Federation guy came down and decided, because I guess he was stupid, to try to model their civilization off of the Nazis. Because he was like, the Nazis were super efficient and, you know, turned Germany into a world power. And it's like, well, yeah, I guess...
Well, what he specifically wanted to do in that instance was introduce all the efficiency and, you know, economic might that the Nazi Germany wielded, you know, from the 30s all the way through to the end of World War II.
Yeah.
Right? That's the part that he wanted to be able to replicate. And he wanted to take out all the racial bigotry and other nasty things that, you know, Hitler and the Nazis did
right.
during that time. You know, unfortunately, that didn't work out at all. Because part of what, you know, unified Nazi Germany was the fact that they all had, a public enemy number one that they could all turn their sights to, which, you know, was
right.
Jews, and then went down the list, like, gypsies, and then anyone else that wasn't a German, you know. The list just kept on growing.
Right. Which is why I think he must have been stupid. Because if you, like, have even done, like, basic, maybe my high school history class was more complete than his, but, you know, in my high school history class, we basically figured out that the German, like, you know, their whole thing was, we're going to unite Germany by giving them someone to hate. Like, that was the Nazis' entire plan, basically. And it also leaves out the fact that before, you know, World War I, Germany was already a world power. Like, they were a world power because of, like, you know, they're a combination of their own natural resources and their strategic location, and then some colonies they were able to seize, through warfare. And it was really World War I kind of wrecked them because they lost and there were reparations and everything. But they were already in position to be a world power, and then they, like, you know, the Nazis used racism to recover them out of a depression they were having. So it's not... It's kind of a plot that falls apart if you are an actual historian at all. Especially since, for whatever reason, he decided to use the actual Nazi paraphernalia. That would have been the first thing I did.
Yeah.
If I was... assuming that
they
I decided...
They had great fashion sense.
Well, they did. That's fair. Although, unfortunately, that's one of the things, is that their stuff looks kind of cool, but it's so iconic now with Nazis that you can't have characters dressed like that anymore, because it's like, even though it looks cool, it's like, Nazis! You know, if they have this cool, like, sort of black and, I think, red motif they have going on with these really neat-looking uniforms, it's like, that's a Nazi. Even if he's not wearing the swastika, it's really obvious.
The SS. Yeah,
yeah, that's an SS officer. Which I actually had some complaints about. There was a picture released for the recent Star Trek movie that had, yeah. like, some people... had I think it was... What? It was Scotty and Sulu, was it?
No, Scotty and Chekhov.
Scotty and Chekhov?
Simon Pegg and Anton... Yelchin? I've never heard his name pronounced, so I don't know.
I don't know how to pronounce his name correctly.
So Simon and Anton.
It was them in these uniforms that a lot of people apparently said looked kind of like Nazis. Which I could...
Well, they are very militaristic, and they definitely... When I first saw it, I didn't realize it was a picture from, you know, of the two actors from the new Trek movie that's going to be coming out.
I thought it just looked kind of boring. It was... brown, it didn't have any colors.
It was a plain brown. And it's, well, really, the uniform isn't really that much different than what our own, you know, dress uniform is for some of our own armed forces, like the Air Force.
Right.
Just the colors.
But one
different.
Of the things I've always liked about Star Trek was that it had colors. Like, even in the movies where they didn't have, like, giant different colors for the departments, they still had the bright, you know, kind of reddish-orange uniforms, which kind of set it apart from modern militaries, which are all very drab and subdued colors.
Yeah.
Which I liked, and I thought that was kind of boring, and also I really hate the hats they were wearing.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's up with the hats.
I associate those hats with airline pilots. Like, I'm sure other people wear those hats, and those are perfectly legitimate hats in real life, but just from a, you know, cultural perspective, when I see those hats, I think airlines.
Yeah, I would too, you know, and I did, so.
So, you know, welcome to that tangent. but those three episodes are interesting in that they very clearly demonstrate the need for a first contact procedure. And the first thing on the list is, don't let your crazy historian who wants to turn people into Nazis go to this planet.
Well, first he was sent there as a cultural observer, right? That's what he was initially sent there for.
Apparently.
You know, and then he decided that wasn't cool enough for him.
Now, do you think he was all, like, duck blind style, like they did in TNG, or did he, like, just show up and be like, hey dudes, I'm from this intergalactic, space government called the Federation, I'm here to observe your culture?
Well, I'm sure that didn't happen at all, because everyone, as the episode went on, the reveal by Kirk and Spock was that, like, you know, this guy is not, you know, of your world, and they're like, what, he's an alien?
Oh.
You know, like, so that's the thing that was happening.
That.
So, and he, you know, humans look just like them.
Well, right.
Right. So you can just walk down the street and not really have to be worried about
them and every other alien in TOS.
Yeah, really.
Makeup's expensive, dude.
All I'm saying is Klingons, you know, brown makeup and really rad mustaches.
Always with the eyebrows.
Always with the eyebrows, that's right. So you can make it work.
That kind of thing got really jarring. I know this happened in TNG too, but I noticed it the most in Voyager was the aliens who looked exactly like humans. They seemed to run into a lot of those. I know TNG did it too to a lesser degree, but it was just, I really noticed it in Voyager. And then in Enterprise they kind of put on a bunch of like, every time they would meet a new alien, it'd be like, they've got some spots or some ear points or some ridges, and it's like, that's a little goofy.
Really what became alien about a lot of the races that you ran into that looked human was their wardrobe.
Oh, yeah,
that. You know, William Thies, you know, did a lot of, you know, stuff. I'm not, I almost said cool stuff, and I realized, you know, that's, that wouldn't be true, because I don't really have a taste for it myself.
That's one of the things that I liked about Stargate, or not Stargate, excuse me, Farscape. Because in Farscape, they used actual, like, puppets and stuff to make alien-looking aliens.
Heck yeah.
Thought that was cool.
That was pretty cool.
I'd like to see a Jim Henson Star Trek. I think that would be cool.
Well, have you heard any more, actually, about from the rumor mill in regards to a new TV series?
No.
Robert Orci is saying that, while not real, plans for a show are almost real.
What?
Which, take that as you will. Again, it's just it just sounds like more rumor mongering to me, but
that is how J.J. Abrams advertises his movies.
And then with cargo containers.
Yeah, it's all about lies.
Okay. You know, but it's, I know Orci has been, you know, kind of banging the drum for an animated series.
Sure, why not?
For it. Well,
I don't have a lot of confidence in Orci's ability to do it very well, but...
Well, neither do I. But what I'm concerned about with an animated series is that it would be about a half hour long.
Yeah, so, that wouldn't be good.
Yeah, I'm not really a fan of the idea of having a half hour long show, because I don't think you can get a lot of meat into an episode that is going to be Star Trek caliber.
I agree.
You know, so, like, it worked really well for Star Wars, because Star Wars is, you know, for the Clone Wars anyway, was a much more action-oriented adventure.
But, I mean, even, like... Like, for example, like, Avatar Korra had, like, this problem where they just, their episodes were too short. And Korra was very action-oriented, but it was just, there was too much going on, and they couldn't fit all of it into these episodes. And so it was like, they had the, my favorite example of that was they had the sequence where they have to find the terror, like, the secret, like, equalist meeting area. And, like, the way they do it is really goofy and, like, really hand-wavy. And it's like, you know, they wanted this to be a longer scene, but they didn't have room for it. There's no room.
Yeah.
And so they had to cut it down to this thing that basically anybody could have done. And it was like, how is this even supposed to be secret?
Yeah, so it's really doing things like that that'll make me concerned for... Plus just the American market itself. Now, there's definitely that audience out there that is adult that does watch, you know, various cartoons. You know, like Adult Swim, for instance, on Cartoon Network has various shows that are not necessarily meant for an audience that is younger than 18, despite the fact that a lot of them watch it anyway. Yeah, and you all know it to be true. So, you know, search your feelings, you know it to be true. But, you know, like, I watched The Venture Brothers, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get a kick out of The Venture Brothers, which season 5 coming 2013. Yes! For that.
Right. But the problem with the Adult Swim model is that most of the cartoons on that show are either Japanese or comedy. Like, Venture Brothers is a comedy show. Pretty much all the good ones that are American on Adult Swim are comedy.
Right. Well, that was my next point, is that, you know, it's like, how do you market this thing where it's not going to look like it's targeted at kids, you know, just kids, and make it interesting to adults?
Sometimes I hate Disney. I like Walt Disney personally. I hate him because this is all his fault. This is the reason why we think cartoons are for kids. And, like, every time you make a cartoon that's not for kids, you have to fight past that cultural expectation. It's a cartoon. It's for kids. Oh my God.
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem with having an animated series, I feel, you know, that is born of Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, is that you have to fight past that cultural, you know, barrier. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a painful experience.
But on the other hand, we could have non-humanoid aliens. Wouldn't that be cool?
It would be very cool, as long as it was like an hour long or longer show, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just
I know that. I know what you're saying, but we are so far off topic.
Like, can you imagine taking any of the episodes of Star Trek, you know, a lot of the good ones, and try and condense it into 25 minutes to a half hour, and still get all
How
the
How long was the animated series? Because the animated series is terrible, but I
think it was probably between 21, 28 minutes or something like that.
Was it? I couldn't remember if it was a half hour or an hour.
No, it was definitely a half hour.
Yeah, there you go.
But would you look at anything that the animated series did as really good?
No.
That could stand up to what other Trek episodes have to offer?
Well, that's exactly my point.
Right.
We've seen what happens when you try to shrink Trek down into half an hour. Really more like 22 minutes.
Well, that was particularly aimed at kids, though.
Was it?
Yes.
Really?
The animated series was totally an attempt to revive it for a children audience.
Huh.
That was the animated series.
I did not know that. I thought that was just them trying to do Star Trek on a really limited budget.
Well, they did that too, but...
Sometimes... Alright, so I'm going to just declare this a mini-topic so we can pretend we're not off-topic anymore.
Yes, okay.
I would really, really like to see maybe something done in... There was a show that I watched recently that I thought would be... Not Cowboy Bebop, although that one's pretty good too.
Is it an anime?
Kind of. It's what I call an American anime.
Okay.
It's like...
Well, that's because a lot of the art students that are coming out of our colleges and universities are all wanting to do anime-style stuff.
Well, I call it an American anime because it is done in Japanese-style animation, but it has a much more Western-themed story.
Okay.
Like, my big problem with that, with a lot of animes that I have trouble watching is that there's a lot of stuff, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, I bet this would make a lot of sense if I was Japanese. Like, if I understood, and I'm sure the same thing happens when you're Japanese and
you're
watching American
stuff. Is it because there's
American
too much story
stuff.
Going on, or is there certain elements
no,
that
there
are
just certain,
to that culture?
There are just certain story elements that I don't get. And, like, I don't understand why these are in here. Like, there's this one thing that I've noticed in a lot of animes, not all animes, certainly, I would never generalize an entire genre like that, but a lot of animes have these really big, grand terms and explanations for stuff that's actually kind of simple. Like, okay. I was watching this one anime that had, like, this enormous, grand discussion over the immune system. Okay. And I'm like, it's the immune system. I couldn't figure out what they were talking about, and I finally figured out it was the immune system, and they were talking about it, and it was, like, this like, magical thing in your body that protects you from harm, and, like, tiny soldiers, and I'm not trying to mock it, because I've seen that often enough that I think that if I was from Japan and had the Japanese cultural context, that would make sense to me. And I'm sure the reverse is true, where, like, if I was Japanese and I was watching a lot of American stuff, I'd be like, what is this? What is this? What is about the story that Westerners find interesting? But I have seen a lot... been seeing a number of animes that are done in the sort of Japanese style of cartoons that have a more... clearly are aimed more at Western audiences. Cowboy Bebop is one... or at least if not, it really fooled me into thinking it was. You know, Samurai Champloo by the same guys. The Gunsmith Cats anime series, which, despite what it sounds like, is not a porn. It is actually really good.
What's it called?
Gunsmith Cats.
Why would that sound like illicit movie?
Sorry, it's just the anime. It's just the manga that it's based on. It's all about drugs and sex.
Oh, okay.
Whereas the anime is not.
Okay.
And, you know, some of the, like, the Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood story. Again, that sort of stuff. Or the guys who did Avatar, give them Star Trek. I'd love to see what they can do with Star Trek. But I don't...
Well, actually, I really share... If we had to hand Star Trek off to somebody, I really share, actually, Terry Lynn's, from G&T, her sentiment, mm-hmm. that Seth MacFarlane's the guy for it.
Yeah, he could do it. He could do it really well.
Yeah. If we had to talk about somebody that
he could do it, and so. He has the advantage of being, of actually wanting to do it.
Yes.
Like, obviously, if I had my dream, it would probably be Joss Whedon, because I love him so much. But I don't think he wants to do Star Trek. I don't think he has the interest in Star Trek. Or if I could get Ira Stephen Bear back here and have him do another show.
Yes.
But he hasn't expressed any interest.
Ira.
As far as I know. Whereas Seth MacFarlane has actually said he wants to do Star Trek. And, yeah, I'd love to see him do it. I think he could do a great job.
Yeah.
But... I just...
Do we want to get back to our, like, original topic at all?
I suppose. That's why I declared this a mini-topic, okay?
Yeah.
Clearly,
we're going way off into the distance.
Clearly, we wanted to talk about this, and I didn't see any point in fighting it.
Mm.
But anyway, we had left off, we were talking about the aftermath of a bad first contact scenario. And I think that those episodes are sort of meant to build a need for... what would later become the Prime Directive. But even if you're not talking about the Prime Directive, just a first contact procedure.
Well, the Prime Directive was already a thing. It wasn't as dogmatic yet in TOS as it would become in
Yeah. And it wasn't TNG. it wasn't as defined at that point. We didn't really know exactly what the Prime Directive was yet. We knew it was a thing.
But we got more insight into it, especially when we got to, you know, For the World is Hollow and I've Touched the Sky.
Right. And that was another one. That was a legit first contact scenario where they actively sought out contact with these people who were living inside an asteroid.
Yes. Space rock.
And we've talked about this one before, specifically in our Prime Directive episode.
Right.
But that episode was interesting because it showed them actually following a kind of first contact procedure and then realizing that this was an extreme situation and needing to deviate from it. Which yep. I really liked. It showed, you know, some ability. It showed that they had a little bit of wiggle room to exercise their own judgment instead of just having... Because you don't want to go too far in the other direction either. Like, you don't want to have everything... Like, all of your actions are dictated by this set of rules that people who have not been here came up with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they came up with it for these rules for, like, a perfect scenario, but no scenario was perfect, you know.
Right.
Who's the name of the guy who came up with the idea, no plan of battle ever survives first contact with the enemy? I don't remember his name, but he's, you know, that he's a fairly recent guy.
Well, tell you what, we have the power of the internet.
All right, well,
so we can Google this stuff here, so...
It's not super important to the discussion,
survives
but that...
Well, no, now we gotta do this.
Although it does have...
Most because I wanted to click clickety-clack on my keyboard.
Yeah, now everyone got to hear that.
Yes. Carl von Clausewitz? Is this the guy?
Yeah, maybe. Is this the guy? He's a Prussian military dude? I don't know, it could be. There was another, like, entry on this, but... I admit I am not too terribly concerned where the quote comes from. Now we're off on another tangent. And everything is going wrong.
No,
so
it's cool.
Let's just keep going.
All right.
I didn't put this on the list, but do you remember the episode with the Yangs and the Combs?
For Whom Gods Destroy.
Yeah, that's the
no,
one.
No, not that one. Omega Glory, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the one. That's another episode of the... that's another example of the first contact gone dreadfully wrong scenario. And I also... one of my favorite first contact stories from TOS is Spectre of a Gun. Which is a hilarious first contact.
Isn't that the one where they're going in and they're like, we have to talk to these people no matter what?
Yeah, they're
despite
like...
they get, like, warnings of,
yeah,
like,
they're like,
we don't want to talk to you.
We must
go away.
We must establish first contact at all costs. And the guys are like, we're not really interested in first contact. And Kirk's like, too bad. First contact is happening now. And then, of course, you know, they get put into a Western and get told to have a gunfight.
Yeah, what was the end game of that particular episode? Did they actually end up making?
Yeah, the end game of that was that the aliens were basically testing them and were like, "Will you kill these people?" And Kirk was like, "No, we're not going to kill these people, even though they're not real people." And Kirk knew that, so I think the test is a little bit false, and I don't think it really proved anything because, you know, again, they're not real people; they're just simulated images,
right?
That was a little weird, but that was...
At all costs, you must talk to these people.
But, you know, that was supposedly the plot, was that, like, you know, Kirk at the end says, I'm not going to kill... Because, you know, it was the shootout at the OK Corral, right?
Right.
And Kirk and his people were portrayed as the losing side, and they figured out...
Yes, they were.
Then they figured out the Vulcan mind trick, and they were like, we're not going to be shot by your bullets.
We're just not going to be shot by your bullets.
And... So that was a little... That episode is a little funky at that point, but it's a good episode. And I thought it... You know, even though it got a little goofy when the aliens were like, please leave us alone, we don't want to talk to you.
It's like that sign that says no solicitation on
your
door.
Which is technically not legally binding.
It isn't, because it's not... I don't think it's bound by federal law.
No. Nope.
Is the thing.
It's just, you know, you see that sign, and that just means they're going to be extra unfriendly, because they have a sign.
Yep.
Yeah, I did.
I asked you not to come here, but you came here anyway. Now
yeah,
get off my property.
I did door-to-door, like, fundraising for about 2 weeks, and
I'm sorry.
Like, this is the worst thing in the universe.
Yeah,
I don't want to do this ever again.
Yeah.
Just because I just couldn't deal with the amount of unfriendliness. It's just, people are just so mad to see you.
Yeah, well, they don't want to be interrupted.
Which I understand. I don't like it either. When people come to my door and are like, I have this thing for you. It's like, I didn't... What? No. That's not what I want to do right now.
Do I look like I'm interested in this thing?
If I was interested in this thing, I'd go out and look for it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought, too.
But anyway, shall we move on to TNG, or do you have any other TOS first contact?
For TOS particularly, Trelane.
Trelane?
Yeah. Hmm.
I suppose. Again, I hadn't put Trelane on the list because it was sort of a forced situation.
Spectre of the Gun wasn't.
Well, that was them initiating the initiating.
Only because Kirk was like, "We gotta talk to these people."
Well, you know, he'd heard about their super sweet, like, Western technology.
Yeah, but this is why I asked the question at the start of the episode. You know, what are we considering first contact? Is it with a civilization, or is it with just something that is new, different, new and different? You know, Trelane is certainly new and different.
That's true.
You know,
And you could extend that into Q, actually.
Well, you can, and we'll probably get to that with TNG, right?
So. Yeah, I mean, then the Trelane first.
I suppose we could just mash them together because there's been a lot of talk anyway that Q and Trelane are related somehow. So.
Well, there have definitely been a number of like soft canon novels that have said that Trelane was a Q,
yeah,
or like a baby Q or something.
Yeah,
and that would make sense. And there even in, when Q was first introduced, a lot of people were like, "Oh, it's just Trelane again. Come on, Gene. Come on." and Q eventually grew into more than that, but
yeah.
Yeah, first contact with Trelane is always kind of tricky, or with, like, godlike entities.
Well, just anything that is, omnipotent like that, or has a lot more control around the surrounding environment than you do, like, Trelane was still assisted somehow or something like that with some mechanism or something, right?
Yeah, and honestly, it's been so long since I've seen that episode that I forget exactly what happened
when
they broke.
I mean, there was a mirror or something like that?
He had a machine that they broke. But that didn't, like, stop his power. It made him mad, as I remember.
Yeah.
And it was bad for him, but it didn't, like... He could still kill them, which is why at the end his parents had to show up and be like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, bad Trelane.
And he was
bad.
And he got all... Like, threw a hissy fit.
Yeah.
But I don't remember, like... There's only so much you can do in that sort of situation. Like, when you... You know, when you're at the mercy of this seemingly omnipotent creature... The, proper diplomatic introductions and the exchanging of ambassadors isn't really something that you're... And again, it's not something they could have prepared for because they were, they were just grabbed. And Trelane was like, hey guys, you're in my house now and you're gonna, like, be my little dolls.
Well, he invited him down.
Did he? Is that how
it
worked?
Because they beamed down and at first it was, your guests, and then it became, you guys aren't allowed to leave.
Which I guess maybe the implication is that they should be a little more careful when they accept invites like that. Be like, all right, are you an omnipotent being that's going to take us hostage? Because if so, we're leaving.
It makes me think that maybe Starfleet has a lot of bureaucracy that doesn't agree with itself a lot of the time, perhaps behind. Because in some situations, like Spectre of the Gun, they're just like, you got to talk to these people no matter what. And then with something like this with Trelane, it's just like, beam down. You talk to them.
Whatever.
So, yeah. But anyway... So, did you want to move on to TNG? Because I don't got anything else for TOS, I think. No, wait, TOS, Horda.
Oh, right, the Horda. We want to talk about that. Yeah, the Horda is one of my favorite situations, because it was like, you could argue that it was like kind of a, like, we're being ambushed by evil aliens situation, but at the same time, it was one of those things where it was like, humans had made first contact with the Horda. Not the Enterprise crew, but these miners.
Right.
And that was a hostile first contact.
Yeah.
Because as we found out later, they were breaking all the eggs and stuff.
Yep.
And really, those miners aren't very smart either, because it's like you find this, vaguely egg-shaped thing, and there's this creature
perfectly
around,
round
and you're like, yeah, I wonder what that could possibly be. Just saying.
I wonder what came out of those eggs exactly, though.
Baby Horta.
Well, what does a baby Horta look like, though?
A small Horta.
Does it not move?
It probably moves.
Yeah, so they were just stomping eggs, right?
Well, they were like, it was like, if you stomp a chicken egg when it's only, like, 2 weeks along, there's, like, a little thing in there, but you won't recognize it as a chicken.
Right.
So,
this is probably my question. What does a baby rock look like?
Probably some gravel. You break open the egg and there's, like...
There's a bunch of gravel inside.
Yeah, probably.
Strangely morbid.
I mean, that's what I imagined. And I really liked that episode because it was, like... I mean, that episode's good for a whole lot of reasons.
Well, it took a little bit of kind of push and pull to kind of figure out that this thing was sentient and not a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And one of the few times they ran into, like, a non-humanoid alien, which was just cool.
Yeah.
And, an example of first contact under, like, under very extreme situation. Because it's like, this thing doesn't speak the same language as you. It doesn't even have a mouth to speak. You have to have Spock, like, telepath with it.
Yep.
Which really makes me wonder why... I would think that, there would actually be, like, a procedure for what to do when you have an alien that you absolutely cannot communicate verbally with. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit to TNG, actually, because... to Darmok.
That's a lot. That's Agra.
Because I love Darmok. Darmok's a great...
1991.
Yeah.
Oh.
Darmok's a great episode, but when I was watching it more recently, I immediately thought, wait a minute... You remember that guy who they called up when they needed to talk to Tin Man? Why didn't they bring that guy over to talk to these people? Because, like, part of the problem is that we supposedly have this completely incompatible language. Like, with the... What were they actually called? They weren't called the Darmokians. They had an actual name.
Children of...
The Children
Tarma.
Yeah, the Children of Tarma. And it's like, we have a completely you know, our language doesn't work the same way theirs does. And it's like, okay, let's get a telepath in here. I mean, I'm not saying a telepath would have automatically worked, but I think it would have been a lot better than what they ended up doing, which was like...
Well, they didn't have one immediately on hand, I don't think, right?
No, but they've introduced... They've
the best they had was Deanna Troi, who said, I sense nothing but good intentions.
Okay, no. All right, so, no, because they've met Starfleet. They established in this episode that Starfleet had met, you know, the Children of Tarma several times before then.
Uh-huh.
And that they'd always been like, you know, they're not hostile, but we have no idea what they're saying, because they're all, you know, gobbledygook.
True.
So this next time, the Children of Tarma specifically initiated contact, because they flew their ship over to this planet, and then started beaming a bunch of prime numbers at the Federation.
Right.
And were like, hey guys, come here and talk to us, was sort of the message.
Right.
And Starfleet sent the Enterprise. It's like, well, why didn't you stop over at Beta Z, and pick up a telepath? You know, pick up, we can get Luxon Troi in on this action.
My guess is they just didn't do their homework.
Probably.
That's the only thing I can think of, right? Because
this is something that comes up whenever
you... Well, they had read, I guess, a preliminary report of whatever ship had come in contact with them before, which it said it was uneventful, but they were incomprehensible.
Right.
You know, and that's part of the opening gambit scene, is that they're talking about, oh, you know, it's all about, you know, having patience and, you know, just taking the time to understand what they're saying and getting used to it and understanding it, which is, you know, what the episode was, but... You know, you would have figured that it would have been like a video log or something.
Well, I mean, maybe there was. Who knows? But
they didn't bother to watch it if there was.
But they knew that the universal translator didn't work. That was like the key issue here.
Well, no, it worked. Because obviously they could understand what they were saying. They just weren't able to understand what the meaning was behind it. You know, because they kept spending on things like shock when the walls fell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the river Tamok when in winter. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I understand that those are words coming at me, but I have no idea what they mean. And Data said it perfectly in that episode, which was, you know, it's analogous to understanding the grammar, but none of the vocabulary.
It's like when someone says, Transformers was a good movie. I'm like, I know what those words are, but when you put them together like that, I don't understand.
Smartass.
Oh.
I think we should go to a music break here real quick, because we're approaching the top of the hour here.
All right, I like music. Yeah. Play us some music.
I like a little bit of music, too. And we're not actually experiencing a whole lot of summer here. In Washington.
We had summer for like a week.
I actually read a very interesting thing that we've had only, I think it was, what was the number? It was like less than a half hour of actual summer.
Sweet.
According to
this guy.
I hate
summer. Summer is hot and annoying.
Oh my god. From Hawaii.
I hate heat. If my temperature is above 75 degrees, I'm not interested.
Well, I enjoy warm weather, so I'm going to play a little bit of Kokomo as well.
You're listening to the podcast and archive of All Things Trek. Music breaks have been cut out due to copyright reasons. If you'd like to hear the music, please tune in live Saturday 1 to 3 Pacific Time on Trek Radio.
Welcome back to All Things Trek here on TrekRadio.net. I'm Bob.
And I'm Oren.
So I have $50 of Amazon gift card burning a hole in my pocket.
No, you have $51 Amazon gift cards burning a hole in your pocket. I've decided that's what the prize is going to be, remember?
Do you want a new intro or not?
You think I could get away with 150-cent gift cards?
You know, I'm not sure. Maybe? I don't know if there's a lower limit at all on the gift cards. I didn't look into that part of it at all. But anyway, we have our contest still going on.
Excellent.
And it's for a new intro for our show, because I'm tired of playing the StarCraft one that we chose, or well, I chose.
You chose. Don't put that on me.
You didn't care.
It's true, I didn't.
I was just like, we're using this as our intro. You're like, okay.
I was not guilty by reason of not being involved.
Right. So, we're looking for a new intro. Please have it be 90 seconds or less. You must be 18 years or older to enter. And the prize, the grand prize, because there will only be one winner, will be a $50 Amazon gift card.
And how long do they have to...
August 31st.
Excellent.
August 31st.
Oh, I have a couple of ones that I want to plug, too.
Uh-oh.
All right, so first, this isn't anything to do with us. This is, if you haven't already, you should go listen to the most recent Gates of Stovacor episode, because it was really funny. It was a bit of a riff on Serenity, and that's all that I'm going to say. I really liked it.
For the Gates of Stovacor?
Yeah, for the Gates of Stovacor podcast.
I haven't heard it yet, so I'll have to go check it out.
Also, just to remind everybody that on August 25th, we are going to be having SF Debris on the show, if all goes well. And, you know, still, fingers crossed, knocking on all the wood I can find, that everything will be fine. But I'm really excited for that, because I am a huge SF Debris fan, as anyone who's listened to this podcast has probably figured out. So it's a little bit of a squee moment, just a little.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. And, that's the other question. I actually forgot about this. I was going to ask this at the beginning of the show. Bob, you also read Assimilation Square, didn't you?
Yeah, I have the first two issues of it.
Yeah, I saw them sitting over there. And this is for anyone who isn't or doesn't remember. This is the comic, the Star Trek Doctor Who crossover comic that they're, that they're doing right now.
Yep.
I read the first two. I wasn't terribly impressed. Bob, I'd like to know what you thought about it.
I'm enjoying them. I mean, I'm not really a big comic book guy to begin with, so it was a little jarring when I'm only getting kind of bites of the overall story.
Yeah, that's really... It reminded me
it took a minute for me to kind of accept the fact that I'm paying for both the artwork and the words on the page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not one or the other. I'm getting both here on that. So, you know, I'm eager to see more of the story because I really want to get to the meat of the story, which is, you know, about the Borg and the Cybermen being together and, you know, going out and making things bad for everybody.
I guess. Like I said before, I feel like the Cybermen are just kind of an empty threat compared to the Borg. Like, the Cybermen have never really been that dangerous, even for Doctor Who. And, like, the Borg are, like, the big
really?
Thing.
You don't think they were dangerous?
No, I don't. Okay. They've always been defeated pretty easily. Like, the closest they ever came to being dangerous was...
By Deus Ex Machina plots, yes.
But the closest...
Conventionally, they're terrifying.
The closest the Cybermen ever came to being dangerous was in the... What's it called? It was a David Tennant. He still had Rose... it was the one with Torchwood. I forget what it was called, but you know they were dangerous there. But that was about it, really. And even then, they were overshadowed by the Daleks. You know, when you have like half living, half robot aliens in Doctor Who, I think of the Daleks, not the Cybermen. And I get that the Cybermen have the whole assimilation thing going that the Borg have, and that they don't have that with the Daleks. But I just think that if we're going with the most dangerous Star Trek villain. And the most dangerous Doctor villain really should have been the Daleks. Because I don't really see what the Cybermen bring to the Borg. I get what the Borg bring to the Cybermen, but what are the Cybermen possibly going to do to benefit the Borg at all? Like, what, they could teach them how to make arm lasers, I guess? I'm pretty sure the Borg can already do that.
Their own weaponry already, yeah, the Borg. They got their little plasma condenser thing.
Yeah, which they
got,
sometimes. Anyway, I thought that was... I thought that was a little bit of a downer, but so far I'm going to keep reading it as it comes out. It's really weird to have to read a comic issue by issue and not just have it. Like I've been so used to reading comics after they finish their run, I just read them all at once. It is way more satisfying.
Well, I'd imagine because you're getting the entire story at once, yeah. And it's all making clear. So you have to wait a month.
It's not like a television episode where it's like a complete story and then I wait for the next one in the arc. It's like. Pieces of a story. It's like trying to watch a television episode in 10-minute chunks. And I'm like, I never... Anyway.
Commercial break. Month-long commercial break.
Month-long commercial break. All right.
No, I'm really enjoying them. You know, I'm definitely getting into the Star Trek side of it. I'm getting into the Doctor Who side of it. You know, I enjoy both sides of it. You know, I think it's being executed well enough. I mean, I also have just a lot of my own imagination. Being a fan of both, you know, IPs... Yeah, I can definitely hear the Doctor when I'm, you know, reading the stuff. I can also hear all the various Star Trek characters, you know, Picard, Riker, Crusher, all them.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I can hear the Star Trek characters. I can't really hear Matt Smith.
Really?
No, because Matt Smith, like, his dialogue doesn't translate very well into a page, in my opinion.
You don't think so?
In my opinion. Because he's all, like, super energetic and in your face.
Megan would cry if she knew that.
Well, I'll tell her later.
She's in the next room.
I can collect some tears. Who knows? The point is that when I read his dialogue, I don't hear Matt Smith talking, because Matt Smith is all, like, he talks way more than that, first of all, and he's just really super energetic and in your face, and it's hard to describe that in text. I've said all this before, but you weren't here, or I would have just told you when you were here. Alright, so anyway, we have a topic that eventually we'll get back to. So,
we're talking about first contacts, not the movie, mind you, but actual first contact scenarios that occurred in the Trek universe. We were kind of in TNG a bit.
Yeah, we'd gotten into TNG. We were talking about Darmok and how I really think it would have made more sense for them to have a telepath along.
Right.
Like, you know, like they did.
All they had was Troy.
Like they did in Tin Man, which I really liked that. I thought that episode made perfect sense. They were like, we have this alien. We don't know how to talk to it. It's weird and different. We're going to send a telepath over and see if he can get anything out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it in the Horta episode, too, with Spock and the mind melding. And I was like, that is an avenue of storytelling that Star Trek didn't do nearly enough with.
Yep.
because they had telepaths, but I don't really know what to do with them a lot of the time. Especially since we established that Troy's not even a telepath, she's an empath. And she can't even use that for anything useful except in Face of the Enemy. It's a great episode.
Yep.
But, alright, so the first one I have on my list for TNG, we jumped ahead a little bit, was Justice, which I can't say without thinking of the Batman voice now, but...
Swear to me!
But no, so Justice is the one where everyone will remember where Wesley Crusher gets sentenced to death for walking on some grass.
Yes, for mussing up the garden.
Yeah, and... that is one of those...
Well, it was any offense on that planet, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, it was any offense.
Any offense, you're just dead.
Punishable by death.
Yep.
And it's like, sure, why not? and again, that's one of those things where it's just like, why didn't you, like, you know, you would think you would do even a little bit of basic research into the laws of a planet. Now, granted, most...
Well, they just got there.
Right, but they immediately started beaming everyone down without being like, hey, guys, you want to send us, like, a transcript of... You know, you want to send us like a press release of your planet, of what it's all about, what we should expect?
You have a tour book?
Because they, you know, I mean, you can get those for just regular countries. You can go to like, you know, if you're going to go to, you know, say Egypt, you can buy like some literature. And it'll be like, these are, you know, the customs and legal rules in Egypt that you won't be familiar with as a, you know, as an American citizen. And you need to be aware of them. And it's like, that's useful. You think they, you know, they would just be like, "Hey guys, Mr. Hey, idyllic planet of nearly naked people. You want to tell us what your laws are? You know, what should we got a constitution we could look over? We could have Data read it over, and he could just tell us. It'd be great."
Yeah.
And granted, at least once you know that planet does have the excuse of having like the giant like spaceship flying around
the god vessel.
I don't even know what was up with that guy.
Yeah,
I just know for some reason he loved these people.
Release my child.
I think he was a huge voyeur personally. He just loved staring at all these half naked people.
Yeah.
I don't know that, but that is
that particular episode was supposed to be, I think, you know, making mention of, you know, how do you really have a body of laws and how do you enforce those laws? And this was one extreme of it, you know, which is, you know, for any offense that happens, you just immediately pull out the most severe punishment ever. Or the deterrent is supposed to be, if you do something bad, something really bad is going to happen to you.
Now, yeah, I mean, there's the eye for the eye sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, what I was a little unclear of in Justice was, did their weird law system come from the god alien? Or, like, did he say, this is how you're going to do your laws? Or did they come up with that themselves?
I don't know.
I don't remember that. Because I'm kind of imagining if it was from him, he'd be like, these are your laws now. And that probably at first they'd resist it because they'd be like, no, these are stupid. And then he'd kill all of the ones who resisted. And then he's so powerful, they'd be like, all right, I guess. And it kind of becomes this entire, like, planet that's just been, like, that's just been beaten until it does what it's told. Which really, at that point, it's like, maybe the Federation should do something about this.
That's cool, bro.
send in a fleet and take on, you know, God Alien.
Like Master of Orion all over again.
That'd be an interesting boss fight in Star Trek Online. You should make that as a Foundry mission. That should be your next
Foundry. Fight the God Vessel?
Yeah, the God Vessel has been abusing this poor planet for too long.
There isn't anything available in the Foundry that I could put in there that would be, you know, good substitute for the God Vessel. I mean, the biggest, beefiest thing I think we have is, like the Borg tactical cube, but even then, that's like not enough.
Skin the Borg tactical cube as like an asteroid or something, and say that the God Vessel is like living inside that asteroid. Now.
I don't think I can even do that.
I'm sorry, Bob. I sometimes think you're allowed to do cool things with the Foundry.
Zing.
so there's that one, and like that episode is just kind of, you know, it just. Do you think they would call ahead and be like, what's going on here, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe have an granted. That planet they went to didn't really seem to have much of a legal structure, but, like, you know...
Well, they had their police that were there.
They did, sort of. But I would sort of wonder if you could have, like, an exchange of ambassadors with this planet and be like, you know, their ambassador will tell us all about this planet and the things we need to do to live there. That's kind of what we do in real life.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to know if that planet had, like, a developed enough, like, government structure to have an ambassador. Or if an ambassador would just be some random person they grabbed and was like, go live with the Federation.
Spread our half-nakedness to the Federation.
Indeed. And then I put another episode on here that I don't actually remember the name of. I don't remember what it was, because I put this name down. Do you remember when the bow breaks? What episode that was?
That's the name of the episode.
Yeah, it's the name of the episode, but I don't remember what episode that is. I'm completely drawing a blank here.
Ooh, like what season it was in?
Like what happens in that episode?
Oh, it's when they have the two vessels. One's called the Mariposa, and the other one is I don't remember the name of it. Or maybe it was just the one vessel. Anyway, there was the one planet that had. No, wait, this is the up the long ladder.
Yeah, up the long... I think you're thinking of the Irish and the clones.
I can't think of that.
That's
one.
Up the long ladder.
When the bow breaks. I don't recall when the bow breaks.
Was Hold on. A... Internet. To the internet, because I forgot to put a thing up.
When the bow
I made bad breaks. Show notes, is what happened.
When the bow breaks. From Wikipedia.
Oh, it's... Okay, this one. Okay, when the bow breaks is the one where they find the planet that can cloak, and it steals their kids.
Yes.
And I kind of liked that.
And it was
because,
the radiation, whatever it was, that was actually making them all infertile. So they decided to steal the Enterprise children. They only steal, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Right. Those are totally going
to... And they want to make a new population.
Those are going to... Those six kids are going to jumpstart their population, all right.
Yes.
But that aside, I thought that the way that the Enterprise handled that first contact was pretty cool. They didn't all just immediately start beaming down people without knowing anything about this planet. You know, first they were like... Hey guys, you know, why is come over to our...
Well, the planet cloaked at a, decloaked out of nowhere for them, right?
Right, and then they were like, let's go, let's have a chat, and we'll talk about your planet and what's going on.
Right.
And then they found out that the planet wants to steal their kids, and they were like, well, I don't think we're going to give you our kids. And the planet was like, well, we're taking them anyway.
That's, I don't care what you think. Yeah. Have your kids now.
Yeah, and we're going to take...
So I say remarkable restraint on the part of the Enterprise not immediately opening fire.
Well, this was back during the please kick my ass from first... you know, era of TNG, where they were like, they would get shot at a bunch, and then, like, when their shields were down to, like, 40%, they would finally start returning fire. They grew out of that a little bit, and then Voyager promptly readopted it. Because Voyager does everything D&D does wrong, but worse.
It takes a whole new level.
Yeah. Well, and also, to be fair, I think they had some kind of thing about how the planet had, like, a super shield, and if they'd shot at it, it wouldn't really have accomplished anything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
not very cool for them.
But the actual first contact like part of that episode I very much liked. I thought it worked pretty well. And then Symbiosis is another one that I thought was... And again, a lot of these kind of run parallel to our Prime Directive discussion.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Symbiosis is the episode where you have the one planet that where everyone's addicted to drugs, and the other planet that is a drug dealer planet that
yep.
sells them drugs,
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
it's all, you know, under pretense of it being about a plague, and they don't know about the drugs.
Right.
And I thought that with the, you know, the whole, like, weird, goofy lightning powers that the aliens had aside, I thought that's a pretty good episode. And I think it was a really nice, like, example of how to handle a delicate first contact situation. Because as far as I know, that was first contact for them, wasn't it? Like, I don't think they'd ever really
Yeah, they weren't aware
people.
Of the situation at all. So
yeah, like, I think they'd scanned it a couple of times before.
Well, the freighter was in distress is what happened. They went over and were like, okay, we're going to help you fix this thing and all that, or I think... Or did it get lost?
Hmm?
No, they had to abandon the freighter at one point.
Well, there was a freighter that was exploding, and they had to beam the people off of it.
Right.
And
they sent the cargo
over
first.
People were like, no, you have to beam over the cargo first.
Yeah.
And
it was later discovered that, you know, it was like, oh, this is totally, you know, just the
yeah,
know,
it's drugs.
Pharmacological, you know,
and it, back,
plot.
You know, back then, that was, you know, we still, like, it was kind of cute, because it's like, apparently... This one freighter was carrying a payment for an entire planet's worth of drugs.
Yes.
And it's like, what is that payment? What is so valuable and so small that it could be fit in one freighter?
Well, it might be just some natural resource that's, you know, rare to come by or hard to come by on the other planet.
I mean, even that entire ship filled with gold wouldn't be worth that much.
Well, it might be very easy for the other planet to produce the drugs.
Maybe. Maybe it's just really
you know?
Cheap. Who knows?
Yeah, plus, there's those freight runs might be happening with other ships as well.
I suppose. They made it seem like this was, like, the big run. Like, there was only one freight run, and it was, like, sort of took care of them for, like, a year or what have you. So, I don't know. That's just the thing. People underestimate the space requirements.
Well, it was
for...
very good, because it was very obvious that there was a situation. And they made it apparent, I think, to both parties that the Enterprise crew knew what was going on. And then they were like, and the Enterprise was like, you know what? This is what's going on, you guys. We're just not going to touch it.
Yeah, I thought that
well,
was a...
We're done with this.
I thought that Picard came up with a very clever solution on
yep.
how to deal with that problem.
Well, it was a very Prime Directive one, too, because it's not supposed to interfere at all.
Right, and that was... I liked that episode because it conjured an actual scenario where the non-interference thing was actually, like...
It was a positive thing.
It made
case.
Sense.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, we're not going to let this planet we're not going to stop this planet from exploding because that would be interfering.
Yep.
It was like, you know, if we... It was one of those situations where interference from them could genuinely have made things worse.
Yes.
It's like, you know, it's the whole idea... It's what non-interference is for. So you don't want to muck up in a situation where your actions are actually going to make everything, you know, crazier and worse. But, like, you know... But then they extended it to, we're not going to stop planets from exploding. Because that might make things worse, I guess. Somehow we could make things worse than the planet exploding.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's... we talked about this one during our Prime Directive episode, but who watches the Watchers?
Inadvertent first contact.
Yes, not intentional.
Because they had the duck blind with all the scientists in it.
Which, I don't know, for a long time, I kind of wondered why they didn't just have them set up on, like, a little space station. Because, like, you know, you can take super high-resolution photos. Maybe have some drones doing flyovers. I don't know. I guess you want to get up close and personal with the duck blind. But the duck blinds seem to have a pretty high failure rate, from what I can...
Well, when you start shooting at it with, you know, lasers like you did in Insurrection...
Granted, we only ever saw the one other one in Insurrection.
Yeah. And there was something else going on with the reactor, this other one, or something.
Something bad was
made
happening.
The holographic projection disappear or something. It was something like that.
Well, you should just never depend on the holodeck. The holodeck is just is bad news.
That was mistake number one. Yeah, who watches the Watchers? It was actually really interesting to see that particular episode unfold, because all the natives are coming into contact with all this technology for which they had no basis of understanding of.
Right.
It all going, ooh, the Picard. Whoa.
You know, sufficient.
And then this whole kind of religious movement had, you know,
right,
begun to kind of surface.
The whole idea that, like, sufficiently advanced...
Or the roots of it, anyway, was starting to gain some traction there.
Like, sufficiently advanced music is... Or music. sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, I thought they did that very well. And we were talking about Tin Man earlier, and that's one of my favorite First Contact episodes, because it's just, it's First Contact with something that is genuinely alien. It's not just some aliens who are basically humans with weird noses.
Yeah.
It's an actual alien. We do not talk like them. We don't have any frame of reference for communicating with Tin Man.
Right.
And I understand that sort of story can be kind of hard to do because it tends to involve a lot of long, slow, you know, translation procedures.
Yeah.
And that doesn't exactly make for riveting television. But I wanted more of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Of just genuinely alien interactions. Like, more sci-fi and less stuff that could just as easily have been set in a fantasy setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tin Man is great, and I want to, you know, I give it a shout out whenever I can.
Yeah, why exactly was the reason that they're going out of that area and wanted to talk to this thing just because it was different? Was that it, or was there something more to it?
It was extremely powerful. Like,
how did they know that, though?
Hmm?
How did they know?
It was like emitting super high levels of energy.
Was it?
Yeah.
No. Well, a star does that.
Right, but a star is not alive.
Yeah, but there was next to a star that was about to go nova.
Right.
So how can they tell the difference?
I don't remember. somehow they knew that
there's this thing floating around this star. Go check it out. Oh, the Romulans want it. Therefore, we gotta go get it.
Somehow,
that's what I really felt like. Perhaps the scenario was is because the one power thought the other power wanted it, so they both sent a ship out.
That's a possibility. I remember that somehow they knew that Tin Man was serious business, and you know they sent Tam, I think that was his name, right? Tam Elprum.
Yeah.
Whereas the Romulans didn't send anybody. The Romulans just went there with the method of, well, we're going to try to talk to it, and if we can't immediately talk to it, we're going to blow it right up.
Yeah.
Because...
Not allowed to be anybody else's thing.
Because I guess the Romulans don't really have a very well-developed diplomatic corps.
Well, I'm more convinced that they actually have probably a better diplomatic corps, if anything. Just that their end goal is different most of the time than what the Federation's end goal is.
Yeah, that's probably true.
You know, because the Federation is very much this diverse, you know, democratic body.
They right? did somehow get the Federation to agree not to develop cloaking technology.
Right?
Must have been some pretty skilled diplomats on that team.
Right? So, I mean, it was much more about denial... Denying your political opponent, you know, this potential resource or wealth of knowledge, you know, if you can't have it yourself, then no one can have it.
Yeah, I guess if your viewpoint is that diplomacy is just warfare around the negotiating table, And you're not trying to live in peace. You're just trying to get the maximum amount that you can get out of these negotiations. Then sure.
Yeah, that's totally how Romulans do it.
That makes sense. And then, what do you think about Q-Hu, the one where they first meet the Borg?
Well, the Borg were definitely an alien, very alien-type species, if you want to talk about first contact at all. So much to the point that it was all about a difference of concepts as well.
Right.
Right? The concept of, you know, living. You know, the Borg are very much seeking perfection. And that's not necessarily a goal that's out of sight of the Federation or anyone else. You know, everyone's trying to, you know, become better than what they are. Just the Borg have a very different way of going about it, which is, you know, they have their group collective consciousness and they're going out and assimilating more things into their mass is what it is. You know, it's like, what's that thing called? That big ball you roll around.
Katamari Damacy?
Yes, it's like that. The Borg are like that.
You somehow reference this into Katamari Damacy. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm just saying, that's what the Borg are like. They're just rolling their ball around and getting all the stuff caught up in it for high score. That's what they're doing. They're totally high score mechanic to talk about.
You've got to get your collective big enough so it can start assimilating and galaxies.
It was good before the Borg had the individual introduced of the Queen.
We shall not mention the Borg Queen.
Well, we did, because Voyager's going to be a thing coming up later, so we have to.
I don't want
to. I do things I don't want to either, Orin.
All right, fine.
But I do them anyway, because I'm an adult.
Fine.
But, you know, and it was very much just this very huge difference of concept with how the society conducted itself. Because as Q was saying, they have no ambitions for political conquest, you know, or any other meaningless little concept that, like, the Federation, Klingons, or Romulans did at the time. They were just eating things, this nom 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 across the galaxy.
It's interesting what they can consume.
Yeah. What became the downfall for the Borg as a really, you know, awesome threat was the fact that they had introduced this individual with ambition. You know, whereas before it was a collective going forward, and like I said, eating a bunch of stuff, just, you know, Katamari Damacy-ing its way across the galaxy to an individual with an agenda and their own ambition.
And it's really refreshing watching that episode again to see them still trying to talk to the Borg. Because, like, in later Star Trek, it's like, it's a Borg, shoot it! You know, the Borg are basically zombies. And it's like, if you see a Borg, you shoot it on sight.
Yep.
And I really, you know, it's fun to watch Picard, like, try to communicate with these things that are so weird and different.
Yeah.
And have an extremely hostile view of the Enterprise. As, like, you know, as basically their latest snack.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not really very hostile, but I can see how that could be hostile.
Well, it's hostile, but it doesn't have.
It's really strange that I'm thinking like if I made a PB&J sandwich, it would determine if I had hostile intent towards it.
Well, yeah, what it is you could say it's hostile, but it's not malicious. Like the Borg are not, you know, actively out trying to make your life worse. It just happens as a side effect of what they do.
Okay. Gotcha.
And we already talked about Darmok, but actually First Contact, not the movie, the episode.
The actual episode First Contact.
Which is the one where they are, you know, trying to make first contact with a civilization that has just developed warp technology.
Right.
And Riker is down on the planet. He and a bunch of others were there incognito just observing and... And then he got, like, you know, wounded in a riot, I think?
There was some sort of demonstration of some sort or something like that going on. He got lost in the shuffle and kind of trampled.
Right, and then he got taken into a hospital, and that's where the whole drama comes from.
Yep.
And you have, like, the xenophobic security minister who doesn't want, you know, his people to be open to these new space aliens. And you have this culture that is, like, caught between trying to go forward really fast and the people who are like, we don't want it to go forward very fast, we liked it the way it was. And I really like that episode. That is one of my favorite TNG episodes ever because they do their research on this world. It actually shows them going through the procedures of a first contact instead of just waltz over and be like, "Hey guys, we're from the Federation. It's pretty cool. We have this neat ship."
They go faster than yours.
Yeah, and I really liked that and like the negotiations I forget what those aliens were called.
Malkorians.
The Malkorians with their head of state. Like, between him and Picard. That whole sequence is great. And again, it's one of those things I wanted more of. And I really liked that about Star Trek, was that they had that kind of story, and it worked very well. The only part of the episode that I don't like is the kind of creepy sequence where Riker has to, like, have sex with his alien in order to keep going.
That was a little weird.
It's like, I don't really think they understand what they just did. I think that was something they threw in because they thought it would be funny. Because it's like making fun of all the people who really love UFOs.
Well, I'm sure it is.
But, they just didn't think it through. They didn't realize what the implications of that sequence was.
Yeah. Well, in some ways, the episode itself was also just a commentary on... Because Malkorians are very much kind of like us today, you know,
yes.
Before warp drive, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but pretty much everything that the Prime Minister was saying about, you know, diverting more resources to education, we're moving too fast, things like that, I think that's pretty correct for our own society, is that, you know, there needs to be... You know, more education in a lot of various spheres of thought in academia that needs to be put forward so that it's, you know, more people are exposed to it and are educated on it.
Yeah, that's actually, I listened to a really interesting podcast about NASA, actually, and how NASA is sort of losing the minds of the people, basically. Like, NASA, what exactly NASA does nowadays is something that most people just don't really get. Because it's like, they're not sending people to the moon. They're not sending people to Mars, and they don't have a space shuttle anymore, so it's like, what does NASA even do? And they do a lot of stuff. They do a lot of really important stuff, but it's nothing that we know about because NASA isn't really doing the outreach, or at least not as much as they should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the reason why there's very often very little support for the space program. Like, apparently, even in 1969, when we were landing on the moon, support for the space program was 53%.
That's good. That's still a lot of people.
That's a lot of people, but it is not exactly the sweeping majority we kind of imagine. Like, in the 60s, if you think about it, I always imagined, like, this entire country obsessed with the space program. And, like, there's just this idea that people have that money thrown at the space program is wasted money, and that we should be spending it on other things. And they don't realize that the space program is actually very important, and we are able to conduct experiments in space that are incredibly important to how we live on Earth,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. They don't get it. They think that space is just kind of this weird place we go in and like take a look at because we're like rich and bored and we have nothing better to do with our money. And that's the sort of thing, and that they have that in First Contact. Is they have a bunch of people who that's their political stance. Is it's like,
why are we doing this?
We shouldn't be developing warp drive. Where is this warp ship going to take us?
Yeah.
You know, we already have all these problems on our current planet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think that's really interesting. And going back to our early mini topic, I think that if we had Seth MacFarlane in front of Star Trek, we would have more episodes like that. Because Seth MacFarlane loves being topical.
He does love being topical, that's for sure. Take like Family Guy and Ted. Oh my goodness, Ted!
I did not see Ted.
Oh, you should.
You think so? Really?
Because nothing is stronger than the power of love.
It didn't look like a very
except
good
for an Apache gunship with machine guns.
That's fair, but that movie did not look very good.
No, it was entertaining. I got a kick out of it.
All right, and then the last one I have on my list for TNG is the Masterpiece Society,
mm-hmm.
which is you could argue isn't technically a First Contact story, but it basically works the same way. Is they have the Masterpiece Society is the TNG episode where they meet. This group of people who are, they were split off from Earth at some point, and they live in this sealed environment where everyone is genetically selected to do their, to be good at their job, basically. And
were they actually engineered genetically, or genetically engineered, or were they just bred that way?
It's not exactly clear. There's not like a lot of gene splicing going on. It's not like super transhumanist stuff.
Well, there's some at least some sort of screening process takes place because they didn't have disabilities in the system.
No, it's like they screen embryos and embryos that are gonna have disabilities like being blind, for example,
right.
Are not they don't use that embryo. They use a different one.
Right.
And it's a little unclear exactly how they know that like. You know, they're like, the security dude is supposed to be, has all those traits that's supposed to be good for security. But it's like, how do you know that? It's a little unclear at exactly how they figured that out. But they clearly aren't going, like, you know, full, you know, gene splicing augmentation
mm-hmm.
style. But the actual part about that episode that I find interesting is the way that the Enterprise completely destabilizes their civilization just by being there. Like, just by showing up, everyone, like, there's a bunch of people who are like, maybe we should be doing things differently, and that their society is so delicately balanced that when people start thinking maybe we should do things differently, everything kind of, there's, like, the implication that everything is going to start falling apart.
For their particular model of civilization, yes.
Yeah.
It was, and that was made very clear.
And I think that was very interesting, and I think that obviously a lot of civilizations are much more robust than that, Like, I think if aliens showed up nowadays, I think we would all handle it pretty well, honestly.
Mm.
Just considering the number of sci-fi shows that we watch.
Mm.
You're making the weird hand motion.
Yeah, I don't know if a lot of people would be able to handle it. I think some of the more exposed individuals to, you know, culture and just academics would not have a problem with it. I mean, because there are, you know, isolationist folk, you know, today, even in the world, right?
For sure.
You know, I'm not talking about, like, the tribe down in South America. I'm not talking about something like that. But, you know, if aliens came to the U.S., I'm actually not confident that there would be a lot of unification at all. You know,
I think we'd be okay with it. I don't think it would completely ruin our mindset, because we've been asking for a long time, like, are we alone in the galaxy? And I think at this point we'd be prepared for the answer to be no. I think that it would, you know, it might be weird if we suddenly started having alien technology, like, flooding our civilization. That could be kind of problematic. Like, if suddenly we could back up our brains, that would be weird. That would
carry our drive around.
Yeah, that would be kind of strange.
Yeah.
But if it was just, there's aliens. They exist. You know, they have an embassy now. I think we'd be okay with it. I don't think it would cause too much of a stir. Because I think we've been, that element is so present in our pop culture now. Because sci-fi has gotten so much, or at least some version of sci-fi, has gotten so much more culturally accepted now that it's like, you know, if it actually happened, it wouldn't be that big of a problem.
I don't know. I don't share your optimism on that.
All right. Well, we'll wait and see when the aliens show up, Bob. I mean, who's right, who's wrong.
Well, just look at how, you know, intolerant our own, you know, nation is still after 230-some years of being, you know.
Oh, sure.
Us, you know. We are really polarized, for instance, in this country, in a lot of different things.
It's true.
Right, you know, and I'm sure it'd be the same way if aliens suddenly showed up. It'd be a polarization again with, you know, should they be here, should they not be here, are we going to fight them, or are we not going to fight them, things like that.
Right,
you
know? But I think
And
I'm
really confident that there would be, if we had, you know, like an alien embassy set up of some sort here on Earth, I think someone would go over and start shooting them, and we'd have another kind of mass shooting event of some sort happen,
and it would be
on aliens, and that's just a whole crap storm of stuff that could potentially go wrong there.
That stuff could happen. I think that would be more likely to happen if aliens started, like, hanging out on Earth in large numbers, because in my experience, that's...
Well, like I said, just even in a scenario where they had an embassy set up.
Maybe.
I think someone would go over there and start shooting.
Well, there's always crazy people. But I don't think it would be a huge problem.
Yeah. So.
But anyway, we are just all about being off topic today.
What are you talking about? I was totally talking about first contact with aliens.
I guess.
That was topical. What are you talking about?
But it wasn't, we've had our first chat message of the day. I feel
from
like.
From Beelzebub.
Beelzebub.
It's supposed to be, I think, Beelzebub.
Satan, hell is talking to us.
Uh-oh.
We are doomed.
See, I told you nothing good would come with first contact.
All right, the Voyager episode, Nothing Human, was a first contact with bug-like entities that they cannot communicate with. No communication was ever established in that contact. What episode is that? Do you remember?
Nothing Human. Let me look it up.
I remember there was the Swarm, which was kind of like that. They ran into this, like, swarm of alien bug ships, and they weren't really ever able to talk with them. Oh, it's that one. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the... I remember that one is the one with the Cardassian doctor. Remember
the
that
Cardassian
one?
Cardassian doctor.
Yeah, like, Torres has this weird bug thing on her, and the doctor's like, I need some help, so he creates this hologram based on the works of this Cardassian doctor, who was later turned out to be a war criminal. And it was supposed to be, like, a... And they were like, can we use all this data? Because it's, you know, it brought up the idea of tainted data, was the idea.
Okay.
And it was sort of supposed to be an analogy to the Nazi scientists who conducted all those horrible experiments on prisoners of war. And
right, okay.
Of course, that episode actually gave more credit to this Cardassian guy than was due any real Nazi scientist, because the actual, like, you know, those crazy German scientists who were doing that sort of stuff, they didn't really give us anything useful. Like, the crazy, really twisted experiments were so, like, unscientific that nothing good came out of them. Whereas apparently this guy actually yielded some useful data.
Well, were these things ever found to be, like, sentient or anything like that? I mean, it seems like it was just another kind of... The center of this episode wasn't on the bug itself so much as it was the, Cardassian holographic doctor and B'Elanna being Maquis.
Yeah.
I think is probably what this was here. I mean, yeah, it was a first contact with this bug that was, you know, giving him all
well,
a bad day.
But there was, right, but there it was sentient. It had a ship, didn't it? Didn't, like, a ship show up at one point and they had to beam it back?
Well, it has to be.
I'm pretty sure, like, that's what happens. Like, I think that's what happens in the episode. Maybe a Brizzlebub.
Oh, the bugs have more capable ships.
Yeah, I thought so. Right. They showed up and they, like, beamed it back to him. And they weren't ever really able to talk to him. And so that was an interesting episode. But I'm pretty much done with TNG. There's not a whole lot of them in Deep Space Nine. There's a few. One of the interesting ones is actually in the first episode in Emissary when Sisko makes first contact with the puppets.
Wormhole aliens.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I thought that was an interesting. It's like it's sort of like a Trelane type situation where it's where you're making contact with these aliens that are so much more powerful than you are.
Well, and very different. And they're understanding some of their concepts. Like, some of their concepts and the dimensions they live in don't allow for, like, time, for instance, or the linearity of time.
Yeah, well.
You know, or at least they didn't understand the linearity of time, right?
I've always suspected that they were huge liars.
Just jerks.
Or it's like a weird paradox situation, because they created Sisko, and Sisko explained linear time to them. And you would need an understanding of linear time to go back and create Sisko. So there's, like, a weird paradox going on, or the prophets are huge.
Don't confuse anybody.
Or the prophets are huge liars. this is the conclusion that I have drawn from watching.
Well, they have to have some concept of linearity, I suppose, right? Because if we're talking about the what's the one where Kira and Jake get possessed?
I think that's just called The Reckoning.
The Reckoning. I mean, because that was supposed to happen at a certain time.
Right.
Between the Pawrites and the
prophets. Yeah, that was at an appointed moment. They were going to have this laser fight. And
yeah, laser fight was supposed to happen at the appointed moment. But wouldn't that be happening all the time or never?
I think in three-dimensional terms.
So do I. It's what I'm trying to make sense of. So, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, prophets. So that's what makes them very, very alien for us and what made it really hard for that particular first contact scenario was because there was really a huge lack of understanding of the concepts that both species live in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I also then the next one, and I really like this one, is Captive Pursuit, which is
Tosk.
The one with Tosk.
Tosk.
Tosk is awesome. I really wish we'd seen Tosk again. Or those species.
You get him as a bridge officer in Search for the Line.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
You can have actually a few of them on your ship.
Intriguing. But I really wish we'd seen those guys again. And I really liked it because they had, like, an unusual situation, because this was, like, an alien coming to seek them out. But he wasn't really interested in any kind of formal procedure, so they had to, like... And he was very paranoid, and they were, like... They had to decide how to handle that. And they, you know, they decided to skip the formal first contact procedures, because it was just this one guy. He wasn't really representative of his race. Mm-hmm. He was just in a ship that was damaged. And so I thought that worked pretty well. And then you kind of had the flip of that with Move Along Home, which was really weird.
Games. We love games.
I'm really glad we never saw those guys again. Those guys
I'm sad we didn't.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't like those guys.
I would love to know what the relationship is with the Dominion.
I think it was probably not a very long one. They probably met the Dominion and teleported some Dominion dudes into one of their games, and then the Jem'Hadar were like... Really? You did that? That's not cool. And then shot all of them with lasers.
That sounds about right.
Is what I imagine what would happen if you tried to pull that with the Dominion. You know, Starfleet is pretty forgiving of those sort of, like, oh, you put all of our guys in a game, and that made them, like, suffer horribly, and they all felt like they were choking to death. Whatever. Dominion's not going to stand for that.
Nope, not at all.
That's
kind of a difference of concept, though, again, where they're placing a lot more emphasis on the games that were being played as opposed to, you know, the first contact procedures that, like, Starfleet had in place, right?
Right. And
they showed up, like, all in their dress uniforms, giving the ambassadorial tour, all that good stuff, and the first thing they wanted to do was, like, go to Quark to play games.
Sure, why not?
Right? So which in some ways, you know, kind of makes some sense, and you can actually kind of get a gauge for how a society is by the games they play and how they conduct themselves.
Which is funny, because they were playing a bunch of Ferengi games.
They were,
a Bajoran space station operated by Starfleet.
You're getting all sorts of levels of weird.
I'm not entirely convinced that was good market research on their part. I'm going to skip a couple of them, because we're starting to run out of time here.
Uh-huh.
But
we're always picking up next week, too.
You want to?
I mean,
All right, well, we'll keep going. So there's a the next one is Sanctuary, which was an interesting problem, but again featured the like the most annoying alien race I think Star Trek ever had.
Remind me.
Okay, so Sanctuary was an episode where a bunch of like alien refugee ships came out of the wormhole. The Skreeans, that's what they're called. They were a matriarchal
society. Skin kept flaking.
Yeah, they were a matriarchal society, which of course in sci-fi means the women are like huge, domineering, like control freaks, and the men are like kind of ape-like.
Yep.
And it's like, because that's what our society is like, being a patriarchal one. It's like, sci-fi.
Women are apes. Are women are apes?
Well, that's what it would be if you reversed it. Like, it's sci-fi is just really bad at doing matriarchal societies. They're always portrayed as being really extreme or weird or bizarre. We saw this in Angel One, and we saw it here again in Sanctuary. And then on top of that, they're just they're really entitled. They're just like, we want to live on your planet. You can't, but here's another planet that's just as good. No, we're mad at you because we don't get to live on this particular planet. We need this planet.
This one.
But this other planet's actually nicer because it has, like, resources and isn't in the middle of recovering from a terrible occupation. Yeah, but we want to live on this one.
Well, supposedly there was some part of some legend that was Kimtana or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
I
don't know how they arrived at the conclusion that this had to have been Kimtana. It was because they would come across a planet that had gone through a period of long suffering, as their legend goes, or something like that, of long suffering, and they would come to help heal it, or something like that, I think is what we had come across. And that was interpreted because the Bajorans had just gotten out of the occupation,
right,
which is a long period of suffering.
Right, I know that it matched up with their prophecy.
And the Skreeans were supposedly supposed to be really great farmers or something like that.
Yeah, so. They say that.
Well, yeah, exactly. They've been living on ships for a while, so...
I mean, it's a thing, and it's... I don't know, they really... And then on top of that, they're also, like, you know, they have the skin flakes, and they smell, and it's like, yeah, I can't imagine why no one, you know... I can't imagine why no one would want to live next to these people. You know, to say nothing of the fact that Bajor still has all of these issues with a bunch of people from off-planet coming to live with them. Can you imagine how Bajor would react if they were being told that, like, several million Skreeans were going to come live on their planet now? They'd be like, wait, hang on. That's how the Cardassian occupation started.
Well, that was part of their initial reaction was, like, no, you guys aren't going to be here.
Well, that was their exact reaction. And they were like, no, you can't. We can't do that because we don't have enough food. Yeah, that's the reason we don't want you living here. It's because there's not enough food. Never mind this replicator. No one pay attention to the replicator. No one tell them we have replicators. All right. But yeah, that episode.
That mountain.
No, not the mountain. We're not talking about the mountain.
Sanctuary. So yeah, but they ended up getting back on their ships and moving on.
Yeah, after like some kid exploded.
Yeah,
like, you know, I mean, they eventually moved on because they were like, "All right, fine, you want to give us this awesome planet to live on? All right." And they're all mad. It's like they're all cheesed off that they didn't get exactly the planet they wanted.
If I really had a planet I wanted to pick, Bajor wouldn't be my first choice.
No, neither would it.
It's been strip mined for, what, 70 years?
It's like if you, you know, it's like if you, like, you have, like, everyone has that really spoiled, like, relative. And, like, you get him, like, a, like, you know, this really awesome race car for Christmas because he said he wanted a race car. And he's like, I wanted the blue one! And it's like, you know, deal with it.
Yeah, really.
I don't care. I don't care what your prophecy says. You guys, your entire society has been uprooted, but you're still really, really clingy on this prophecy deal.
Yeah, really.
That was one of the reasons I liked the, you remember the Klingon episode in Voyager, where they meet that Klingon ship that's been lost for a while?
No, I don't.
Well, it was actually an interesting episode. There's this Klingon ship that's been lost, because they went out in search of their, you know, promised homeland. And they're a generational ship. They've been going for, like, four generations.
Hmm.
And their captain at this point, he just wants them to stop. And he's like, we just need to go find a planet to live on. And at that point,
was the ship running out of resources?
Yeah, it was.
Okay,
it was falling apart. They were running into, you know, deadly aliens every day of the week.
That makes sense.
And so he was like, all right, so Torres, you're pregnant with a baby. If we employ some truth massaging, we can finagle it so that you're the answer to our prophecy, and you can tell us to go live on a nice planet. And it was like, that was his, and I was like, yeah, I like this, I see where this guy's coming from. And, you know, the rest of the episode's kind of goofy for a couple of other reasons. Beelzebub in the chat room, yeah, they did think she was a prophet, but that was basically all because their captain decided that they should think she was a prophet. He was like, hey guys, this lady is a prophet. And she kind of matches the criteria in our prophecy, so don't think about it too hard. It was sort of his whole thing.
Oh my goodness. Seriously? Really?
Really.
Alright.
It's not a terrible episode as Voyager episodes go. You know, especially in the later...
This sounds pretty bad.
It's silly, but... I mean, in the later seasons of Voyager, they were always running into weird Alpha Quadrant stuff that was just scattered around the Delta Quadrant.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they were like, hey, we haven't had a Klingon episode yet. We need to find one.
So
they figured it out.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah?
Can you have first contact with a computer?
If it's a life form, sure. If it's alive.
Well, what about Shadow Play?
Well, Shadow Play's an interesting one. That's the one where they go to this planet in the Delta Quadrant that they've only just run into. Gamma Quadrant.
This is DS9 we're talking about now.
Gamma Quadrant. And they go there, and it's like this little village of people, and a lot of them are disappearing. And they eventually figure out that the entire village is holographic. And there's just the one guy who is in charge of it. And he's actually kind of cool. He has a cool story. He was basically... pushed off his planet by the Dominion, basically, is what it came down to.
Yep.
And that was an interesting episode because it was pretty much a first contact situation. And it showed, I think, the way that, like, you know, again, if this had been like a Voyager episode or maybe even a TNG episode, they probably would have been like, we cannot interfere. but because this was Deep Space Nine and they had a much more, flexible understanding of the Prime Directive and it, you know, and the way that it applied to other cultures, they were like, you know, this doesn't stop us from helping.
Right.
Was kind of how it turned out.
Yeah.
And technically speaking, they were making first contact with the guy, because, you know, he was the one actual person there. But then they also figured out that this was pretty much an AI program that they had going. It was a very advanced computer simulation, and it had, like, you know, it had created new personalities that could basically think, therefore they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. And it was like, I think, was this before Voyager started?
This was...
Because Voyager ran into, like, way later in the show, Voyager started running into, like, you know, groups of sentient holograms. Although the only ones we ever actually saw on screen were the ones that were actually derived from Voyager's technology. But we heard about other races that were dealing with sentient groups of holograms.
Well, DS9 started in 2369. Voyager went out 2370.
No, I'm not talking about in show dates. I'm talking about real dates. Like, I don't know if Voyager was running yet at that time. I don't think it was. I'm pretty sure Voyager launched in, like, the end.
It had to have been season 3 of DS9.
Yeah. And this was a season 2 episode.
This is season 2, yeah. Because Odo didn't have his collar yet.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's about all the time we have.
We have a little bit of time. Felser's not with us anymore, apparently. Or he's not available, so...
Well, he has missed a lot of shows.
Yep.
So,
a little bit of time if you want to do something more. Unless you have something to do. I know I've got stuff to do.
Yeah, I have to head out. But I do want to continue this topic next week, because we didn't get to Voyager or Enterprise. So, you know, we will do...
Can you handle a whole episode dedicated to Voyager Enterprise?
I can. But we'll probably all have a secondary
topic. I don't believe you.
I don't think that talking about Voyager and Enterprise will take up our entire show next week. So do you have a secondary topic you want to talk about?
For next week?
Yeah,
for next week. I'm sure I'll come up with something rad and or awesome or neither of the above.
You know, Bob, we used to tell people in advance what our topic was going to be.
Yeah,
we should
that's...
Do that. We should
that's...
do that again. I liked that. That was good. That way they could send us questions in advance.
I don't know. I think that's setting the false expectation that we're both responsible individuals.
Rude, Bob.
Hey, rude. I'm just telling, like, I'm a guardian of truth. Like
yeah,
I said at
right.
the beginning of the episode.
All right. So. Well, you play your music and get us out of here.
Okay, all right. We'll catch you all you folks next week here on TrekRadio.net.